Welcome to The Last Supper, your weekly podcast about art in Asia. I'm your host, Oscar Venhuis. Every weekend, I sit down and release an episode bringing new perspectives and engaging dialogues with emerging and established artists, galleries, curators, and collectors in Asia. Learn more about art in Asia with Christie's Education in-person and virtual art courses, gallery visits, and webinars. Visit Christie's Education website and enter, all in capital letters, LASTSUPPER15 to enjoy a 15% discount. The website link and discount code for Christie's Education can also be found in the description of this podcast. In today's episode of The Last Supper, I sat down with Jeannie Wong, a printmaker based in Hong Kong. We talked about her journey into printmaking, what inspires and informs her drawings, and we talked about her work she made for Art Basel. Hi Jeannie, let's start today's episode. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. The weather is getting better. So.
Yeah, the weather is a little bit gloomy outside today. And as I stir my cup of tea, I'm sure you must be used to the gloominess somewhat because you lived in the UK for a while. How long did you stay in the UK for?
I think because I studied my MA there and it was like around 2 years. I only come back during like the COVID, and I go back in the next year, the September again. And then, so it's roughly around 2 hours, 2 years.
Was that always something you had in mind to go abroad and study in the UK?
Yes, or because before I studied my undergrads in Hong Kong, I actually also applied some art schools in the UK. But like eventually I get into the Academy of Visual Arts in the Baptist University, so I stayed here. And yeah, after that I was like, oh, maybe someday I'll just go further study in the UK. And that is also one reason why I choose the RCA or UK, is just because I study printmaking and there's not like many uni that has such a specific course on prints. So.
How did you discover or realize you had a talent for print and visual art?
Yeah, I guess most like art students, I like drawing comics when I was younger. And then when I get into the art school, of course, you know, it's like, oh, everything has changed. And I mean, I still attend some comics or graphic books course in the uni, but I didn't feel like I fit in also. Because in my uni, we can do all sorts of things. We can do Chinese painting, graphics, glass blowing, ceramics, all kind of things. So I actually just try everything in the first 2 or 3 years. And then I also go to the Australia for an exchange for a year. I think that's the time I actually know about printmaking, because there's like a printmaking studios in the uni, but I didn't get registered in the course. So I was like, oh, when I come back to Hong Kong, maybe I should try it. And then, yeah, I just attend to printmaking course.
I remember I had to develop a portfolio, and that's quite a few years ago, with my work that I needed to submit. And some art schools asked me to do a special project as well. How did you develop your portfolio for uni?
I think I just put every prints I have, like, or because I do etching mostly before I go there. So I just put every etchings I've done in the portfolios. And also I think doing the interview, because this is like some kind of like a Skype interview, I also have one bigger etching print, so I kind of show them in front of the camera like that, because they said, oh, you keep glancing at the corner, what do you have in there? I was like, oh, that's my print if you want to have a look. And they're, oh yeah, sure.
Oh, so you did a interview online. I remember I went over to London for the interview, but of course I was living in Holland, which isn't too far.
Oh, yeah. I've heard like domestic students do go to or European students do go to the RCA for like physical interview, but I kind of glad I'm doing it online.
Do they give you an option for the interview now?
I think so. I think if you are international students, you can kind of choose if you want to do an online one. And especially after the COVID, I think you can definitely do it. Yeah.
Now, before we delve into your work, let's start with your work as a printmaker. Let's say you are at a cocktail party and you meet someone who doesn't know you. How do you explain what you do?
Yeah, okay. So I think my experience when I encounter someone who asked me, oh, what do you do? I said, like, printmaking. And they're like, oh, screen printing. I was like, oh, that's one of the printing method. And I'll try to explain what do printmaking do. I'll say, oh, yeah, do you know stamping, integral printing? And I just explain bit by bit. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, but I'm not sure that they really know what we do. They probably think I just print T-shirts and souvenirs.
And what attracts you to printmaking?
I guess, as I said, I do illustration, but also some more traditional painting, like Chinese painting, or I also try doing oil painting, but I kind of feel like I'm not a painting person. And I'm also not like a really illustration or comics making person. And when I do printmaking, I discovered I really like learning the techniques, and also you can kind of control the outcome somehow if you have like enough practice or techniques. So yeah, I like making image with this kind of techniques, and with the more techniques you learn, you can kind of create like different effect. So like making books, I have like full control on the paper grain and also how I want to bind it, how I want to print it. So I guess I would not say I like this kind of control, but I do feel like I like to involve in every step in my making process.
Now, maybe I'm going to explain the obvious, but I noticed that some people associate printmaking with illustration, but other than that a printmaker is involved in the actual technique and making a print, an illustrator is someone who does illustration only and not necessarily understands the various printing techniques. How would you explain it?
I would say illustration. I think like rather than illustration, I like a good drawing. In the past, I involve like human figures in most of my work, even in painting or different kind of illustrations. But I don't feel it's illustrative enough somehow. It's not like, and it's not really graphic design enough. So, but I would say if you do illustration, you can still do printmaking. There's no contradictory between them. But I just like the process of making prints more than the maybe the image making somehow, because you can experience, I like, can have trial and error and doing the printmaking process.
So how would you describe your own work style?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky question because I can never really put my style in a sentence. Even when I'm writing like an artist statement, you know, and also in LCA, they will have like workshops saying, oh, how do you write an artist statement? And I really like this saying by one of the tutors. She's like, imagine you only have like a minute or 30 seconds. You bump into someone in the lift and you have to tell them what you do. And that's your artist statement. And that's make me struggle a lot because I can't really explain what I did. So I usually just tell people, I do prints, I draw. And I guess I also learn what, kind of like knows what I did by other people's comment, because they are like, oh, you do a lot of landscape, you do a lot of like figures drawing. And so I usually say, yeah, and I observe like sceneries in the everyday life, and I especially like landscape. And to me, landscape is more like a stage, and I put like animals or human figures in there. So if that answers your question.
Yeah, an artist statement can be very difficult. And I wonder sometimes how useful they are, because some work is indeed very complex and multi-layered. Now, your work has character. So if you were to describe your piece as a person, what kind of person would this be?
Person, I would say this person will be probably just sitting at the train station, staring at the mountain and the sea, and probably doing doodles. Yeah, I guess. Maybe with a dog by her side.
So you have a dog?
Yeah, me and my boyfriend have a dog, and I have also have a cockatiel, a really noisy parrot. So yeah, kind of surrounded by animals. Yeah.
I see multiple prints in front of me. So where shall we begin? Or maybe let's start with the one I'm looking at right now. What can you tell me about this drawing?
Oh, this I actually made, I think it's during the COVID. So I think that is during my the end of my first year in LCA. So I have no access to the school anymore. And I start doing more accessible digital drawings. I think this series is more about, if you can see some of the COVID everyday sceneries, but also combined with my imagination with the landscape things. I have really like a struggles on, should I continue the studies or, just take leaves or pause it? And yes, there's like many struggle doing that few months, but continues anyway. So I think I keep pushing myself to do some drawings, and there's a few that I've done during the time.
You were in Hong Kong at the time?
I think I come back to Hong Kong during the Easter, and then the school has closed, so I was like, I just start my summer holiday a bit earlier, and I'll see if I return in the September. So I stay a few months after the Easter in Hong Kong, and I go back in September.
And these drawings are drawn on your tablet, or did you use pencil for this?
Yeah, these are digital drawings. I just find it more handy sometimes, and I do also use iPad to help myself draft the prints, because I can do like layer things, and I can think beforehand. But I also do like more old school watercolors or gouache and this kind of thing, but it just probably occupied me more time. But for a digital drawing, I can kind of just pause it when I feel like I'm done today. Yeah.
Is it mostly the convenience that you would choose one over the other?
I think it's because it's convenience, but also I think the outcome it gave is quite different from the traditional drawing also. But mainly for me is because it's convenience and I can, I can zoom in and just do every details I want to do. But for, physically drawing on a paper, you probably have to prepare a lot of things and think ahead and,
Do you draw to print? Or what I mean is that when you do a digital illustration, do you keep in mind that you have to print it? And I wonder how this impacts your approach to drawing on a tablet.
I think for the physical piece, I usually will kind of imagine what I want to get, like the outcomes. So I can decide what paper I want to use, what ink I want to use. So I have to plan everything beforehand. And I don't want to just ruin the whole week preparation. And then at the end, you find out, you have one layer like wrongly carved and you ruin everything. Or the paper is not like a nice paper and doesn't absorb the ink. So I have to do a lot of preparation. So I kind of like think about the outcomes. And for the digital drawing, I think I didn't really think much. I can do draft in many layers and then maybe I'll choose one draft to start with. And I just continues the drawing and I can delete and add things pretty conveniently. So I guess the digital drawing for me is actually a good way to experiment things about how I construct the image or try new color palette and all kind of things.
So you start digitally first and then you print. So what is your approach and the stages of this process?
Yeah. I usually go through a few stages. I usually draft in my iPad first, and then I choose the color palette and see how colors layers up. And after I'm happy with it, I will take a real size paper to do a hand draw draft again, because I have to kind of adjust the ratio or put things around to see it as a real size print. So if I'm happy with the draft again, and then I have to transfer this draft to my plate, depends on what I'm doing. For maybe for integral, I have to transfer it to my integral, my copper plate. For wood block, I have to transfer it. So this involves a lot of preparation, I guess.
I'm quite conventional and that I was trained to draw on paper, and I still find it difficult to draw on a tablet, although the tactility of new tablets are getting really good. But the main reason why I find it quite difficult is the proportion and the fact that on paper you can see the entire piece, whereas on a tablet I need to keep zooming in and out. So proportions are very different.
I guess because digitally it just gives me like a rough image, and I usually use it when I'm doing colors print. But if it's like a black and white print, I actually prefer doing it on a paper because you can kind of visualize things and you can skip the digital part. But as I said, if it's like a colored print, there's a, like a lot of preparation and design on the colors layering. And sometimes, you know, and you can't really make the image too complicated because there is limitation in printmaking. Somehow, if you want to achieve like a really colorful full colors image like this, maybe you probably have like 30 layers of colors. So usually I'll simplify things and try it out in the iPad first, and then yeah, I know all what I'm going to do when I transfer in. Yeah.
Now let's discuss some of your more recent work. You worked with Art Basel as well. Was that last year or this year?
This year, Art Basel.
Okay, so I'm curious about how you approach projects. Art Basel was for a client or was commissioned, whereas the work at Arche was your personal work. Did you approach Art Basel differently because it's a commercial show, or what can you say about this?
For the Art Basel, because as I mentioned, I work with the Hong Kong Open Print Shop. They invite me for this project. So they give me quite a lot of freedom on what, like the motifs and what techniques I should be using. But yeah, they do suggest me, oh, maybe use intaglio because like I'm the only one doing that like among that bunch of people. But I also think it's like a good chance because when I come back to Hong Kong, I no longer have a studio with me. So I usually just go to a different studio, rent the studios, or like I do have like a really small press at my home so I can do like small print. But I think these Art Basel projects give me a chance to actually do like a proper big size etching again. And then I think I use most of my time thinking what to draw, what the images for the this project. And at the end, and also what I have to consider for this project is because they also mentioned they want us to at least sell some prints at the Art Basel, because if you got collected or you sell it in the Art Basel, that's probably a good thing to you. But when I think about the image, I didn't really think about how people will like it or buy it. I usually start with some kind of stories or like topics. Then I start drawing or sketching about the image. And for the Art Basel project, I think that is done around the end of last year. So it's like the winter time, and I went on a trail hiking with my friend and with the dogs, and I collected a lot of Hong Kong landscape along the trail. So I put them in this project, and I kind of name it or make like a story line behind it's like a journey or something. But yeah, as you mentioned, I didn't really consider the will it sell or not. Okay, but I do make a print in different size. I do make like a smallest print. So I guess if someone want to collect it, they can probably go for the smaller one.
What I've seen so far when I look at the drawings and illustrations is that they are all kind of mini stories, a single image with a narrative. Where do you draw your inspiration for narrative from?
I think generally when I think about, the narrative in the stories, I usually, in the past, I start with image. As I said, I usually collect a lot of random snapshots in daily life, and I kind of do it not in a collage way, but I do lay them out, and then I'll think about the image I want to generate from this field object or like a setting. But after I study in the RCA, it's probably because of the lockdown also, I do a lot of like small writings, and then I drop things down. And I think these writings actually eventually helped me to develop this narrative more easily, or that's the time I kind of start with like writing somehow. I think usually I drop like a few simple words down, and I connect them afterwards. and I start like sketching.
You mentioned you make notes. Do you journal as well?
No. I mean, I tried before, but I mean, I'm too absent-minded. I usually just forgot. So that's why when after we got a smartphone, I do snapshot. Instead, I have to sometimes go through the album to see what I did last month because I forgot already. But now I like using this note function from the iPhone, so I can just write down what I see today, and then sometimes I can just grab pictures in there, so later I may find them useful.
I have a small favor to ask that will make a big impact. The Last Supper is offered to you at zero cost, and if you like this show about art in Asia, give this podcast a star rating or subscribe to this podcast channel. Many thanks, and let's continue. So we're looking at one of the pieces that you made for Art Basel. Can you speak more about this work you made?
I'll describe it as the point of water on the ground on a dark background, and there's like a shooting star falling from the sky, and also a bunch of white fish in the middle and three weird plants at the side. So yeah, the title of this print is called To Fetch. Actually, this print is inspired by the, as I said, I go on this trail walking during the winter, and this fish is actually the koi fish I saw in the reservoirs. So I was like, oh, it looks really pretty and weird in a way.
Oh, really? What's so weird about it?
I mean, they are actually expensive fishes. You should be kept in your garden, but they're like really, probably someone put them there, and they're like really huge, and they're like shiny in this point of dark water, so I find them quite weirdly attractive.
Another question I have for you is about the number of prints you decided to make. You printed 11. Why this specific number of print editions?
Yeah, I think because, as I said, I have to print like sort of identical editions for this project. And usually what we do is we actually start, as you can see, there's at the end 11 editions, but I will usually print at least doubles of the print so we can kind of select from them afterwards. So for this one, I probably print 20 or something. And then I found 11 of them are satisfying and can be called an edition, which should be identical to each other. So I include them in this edition series. And the rest, they will be called maybe artist proof or printing proof and other sort of stuff.
Have you made the artist proof available as well?
Yeah, some people do like collecting artist proof, or if all your editions are gone, people will like desperately ask, do you have an artist proof and you can still sell it? And actually, artist proof are kind of unique because there's only one. For this project, they collect everything, even the artist proof, they've saved it somewhere. Yeah.
The next work we're looking at is called An Over Intimate Trip, and it shows a mountain hill, and in the vegetation there is what appears to be a wooden rowing boat filled with water, which seems to be stranded next to a footpath. What can you say about this work?
I guess I like to put objects or figures in like a, not like a usual setting. So as you can tell, it looks like kind of weird, or I think they can create a kind of a narrative or drama behind it. You start imagining why the boat is there, and is that actually on the water surface, or is there like a just a another part of the trail? And actually for this one, it's actually a white kind of ground, probably because of the limestone there doing a part of the trail. So it looks like really fascinating to me that the whole trail is actually white in colors. The right-hand corner is actually a cloud on, yeah, just appears somehow at the right corner in the sky. Because I like taking pictures, as I mentioned, about like daily sceneries, and I do like taking pictures of clouds, funny looking clouds. And sometimes I find that there's like no clouds in the sky, but it's only one or few like really isolated and placed it there. And yeah, I find them interesting.
And there is one more work in this series, which is called Glimpse.
Yes, there's a handkerchief, and there's like a small kind of seed put on the handkerchief. is actually placed also on a meadow of grass, and behind it is like a curtain lying on the mountains and the moon and the star at the background. So it's described as a landscape.
So this is also the darkest one in terms of color tone, and I quite like the darkness and the mysteriousness of it. What can you say about the theme you had in mind when you were working on these prints? And I wonder if this was the last or third work you made.
I think it's the second one. So it's kind of in the middle, because I start with the smaller one, the fish one. Part of it is because I can test things out with a smaller plate, but also kind of kickstart of the feelings of making this series. And this is the second one I made. Yeah, I think I also quite like this one among the three in the series.
You said that this work, the one called The Glimpse, is also one of your favorite ones. What do you find attractive about it?
This one is actually inspired by the camping trip I went also, but I think it's not exactly during that winter. But I do remember we went to this site that is surrounded by mountains. And you can actually see the moons coming up behind the mountains. So it looks like really bright, like it kind of looks like a sun when it goes up. So yeah, I really like this ideas of the moonrise.
When I look at your earlier work, it appears to be more colorful. The last pieces that we looked at are monochrome in color. Beside the medium that, of course, dictates the use of color, what is the reason for this?
Yeah, I guess for using color or not in my work, it usually depends, as you said, like the mediums or like the technical of thing. And I think like when I'm doing different prints, using different technique, I think kind of differently. I generate the image kind of differently. For etching, I will think about how to do more delicate, fine lines, details I want to include in that image. And so for this three works in the series, I do think about how I can put good use of this technique. I can create like a more mysterious, or I can contain more details in the image.
So the printing medium and technique you have in mind, it forms the type of drawing you are going to create. Am I correct to say that?
So if I want to do like a really colorful print or image, I won't even think about using intaglio. So I'll think, oh, maybe I'll do it with wood blocks, and then I will then adjust my image accordingly. So yeah, I think the techniques or the mediums do affect me a lot when I think about the image.
Do you work the other way around as well, where you develop a drawing and then decide the best print technique?
Yeah, then that will become a drawing. So yeah, I think like for drawings, it gives me somehow more freedoms. But also why I like doing printmaking is they kind of give me not rules, but I can still kind of work within some limitation, but I can kind of also use them as my tools to create something that digital drawing can't achieve.
You are both tech-savvy while also mastering the conventional techniques of printmaking. So you are combining the physicality with the virtuality, which in Hong Kong appears to be a very unique skill and gives your work an extra dimension.
Yeah, I think when I do printing, I mean, for example, for the same plate, if you print with different paper or different colors of ink, you can already imagine the outcome is quite differently. So I will also put them in my mind when I start drafting the image. I will imagine, or do I want to have like a more, you know, high contrast print at the end to give like certain atmospheres or certain feelings. And I may choose like maybe this traditional printmaking paper. But for example, for in this series, I actually use the Japanese paper. So they give like more like a soft blending of the ink. So if you look the print in the real life, the ink is kind of like kind of blend a bit like the watercolors and kind of absorb into the washi paper fibers.
It's fascinating you choose to work with print because Hong Kong is in fact a terrible place for paper storage because of its high humidity.
Yeah, it molds. And but that happened to me also in the UK. I was doing this mukuhanga prints, so I have to keep the paper wet. And then after a week, I was like, oh, I can go back to the studio now. And when I took the papers out, they have like vibrant pink mold on it. And I'm like, oh my God, I've never seen this pink mold in Hong Kong. And when I go back to the studio, I asked my technician, oh, I have pink mold on my paper. And she's like, oh yeah, pink mold happens. And I was like, oh, I never see pink mold in my life. They're literally pink.
Have you considered to make your own paper as well?
Yeah, I am actually going to the Awagami factory next week. And they have this summer washi paper making program. So it lasts for around 5 to 6 days. So I'll be making paper during the week.
Sorry, I missed that. But is this in Hong Kong or Japan?
No, in Japan. So that is one of the paper mills that I like to purchase my Japanese paper from. For example, this one, this paper is the bamboo paper from the Awagami. So they give like really nice quality. So when they have the summer workshop, I was like, oh, I have to go. I'm not sure how many paper I can make it though. Yeah.
I have a personal interest in paper because I work a lot with paper as well. So I'm curious, and this may sound a little bit nerdy, I'd like to know more about your paper quality and choice. You said about the softness or how your ink seems to blend into the paper. What other properties does this paper have?
I think the Japanese paper, as I mentioned, this paper factory, paper mill called the Awagami, they have developed really nice paper, especially for printmaking. The good things about them is actually they will list out which paper is good for which techniques, or this paper is actually good for calligraphy, for watercolors, but some are good for woodblocks or even like intaglio printing. So I really like this idea that they list out really clearly what fibers they have in different papers. And also I mentioned they give like really nice subtle feeling or like nice contrast of the ink. Yeah, if in other paper, for example, Chinese paper or Korean paper, I think they can also be used, but you have to test things out. You have to see if the inks can get on it like nicely enough or not. But that's one reason why I like the Japanese paper.
Your drawings are often about landscape, still lifes, or drawings with animals. You said you used to draw people, but in your recent work, they are absent. Why is that?
Yeah, I guess I do a lot of people and figures drawing when I do comics before or not, like illustration, graphic books. And after that, I don't know. I actually still do it when I first went to RCA, but there's just one day, this classmate of mine, I think he's a Danish guy, he just came, oh, I really like the animals you did. They give like a really ambiguous feelings. And I'm like, oh, thank you. But then also, I kind of rethink about, oh, is putting human figures necessary in my work or not? Because sometimes I guess the figures gives too much information. Somehow, when I want to create like a frozen kind of captured scenery and just arouse people's like imaginations on what happened before or what is going to happen next. So I guess eventually I stopped putting human figures in it.
And that's a good response when you said, why do you need people in a drawing? So it seems you're going through a process of not necessarily elimination, but a very deliberate approach of removal.
Yeah, I think I kind of evolved from the human figures and the animal figures. And later on, I just put objects in there. But yeah, I still tend to put some characters in there.
And what are your current obsessions that occupy you?
I guess for my latest obsession is in this book, I actually choose like different objects to be the characters in my drawing. So I think I start with the key or the apple first. And after that, I just make a series of work using this object as my characters. So I created this, I just call it like object books. So yeah,
In my hands, I'm looking at a booklet you just talked about. What is the idea behind this new project of drawings?
Oh, that's actually came up with one poem I've read. It's originally, I guess it's a Chinese poem. The poet is, I forgot. But she mentions like that poem is actually about poets. She said, oh, don't trust any poets. They lie to you. They say it rings or it just, yes. And she just say like poets romanticizing everything. And she has this one line at the end say, but we do like the poems because we all melted with a hint of warmth. Like, and we're like, oh, yeah, we do like to romanticize things somehow in daily life. So I choose some daily life objects and yeah, I make narrative out of it. Yeah, I think I start with the stone first. Some of them are probably inspired by a few pictures I took before. So I choose the objects probably from my previous pictures. And then the rest of the scenes are imaginative. But I do try to put things for the apple ones, for example. I do try to put them somewhere on the table to kind of observe the composition. But most of them are just out of my imagination.
What is your approach to a new project? Would you, for example, begin with a composition or concept or specific experience you wish to express? What can you say about this?
Yeah, I guess there is specific like emotions behind some of the drawings. For example, for the candle one, that is probably inspired by the funerals I have been a few months ago. And then I just start with the candle, but I don't want to start with like a white candle. So I was like, why not? Like a red one that's kind of meant like celebration, but also in Chinese culture, it can be the candle for the ghost. But yeah, anyway, I think I choose the objects out of certain emotions first, but they kind of come just naturally and eventually I'll start creating things out of them.
When I look at the drawing with the candle, I wonder if you are a spiritual or superstitious person.
Both a bit. I'm not like really superstitious, but I think it's more like a spiritual. But when I go to hotel, I still knock on the door. Yeah. Before I open the door, I knock on the door. People say, you have to say, oh, I'm coming in. I'm just staying for a few days. But I don't say a thing. I just knock. Just in case there's anyone in there. Oh, yeah, I do like to burn incense just to create like a mood or atmosphere. Oh, now I have to concentrate, focus and work. And yeah, I have to place all the tools around me because I hate looking for tools in the middles of drawings or printmaking. So I place everything there and make a coffee or water like just there, so I got like a small station set up that I don't have to go anywhere. Yeah.
Is that part of your routine before you start with your work to burn incense?
I think my routine when I do in daily life, or especially when I do creations, coffee is a must, and also incense when I can burn them. And also, yeah, I do like to go for a walk. I walk a lot, even in this hot weather. I prefer walking than waiting for the minibus or the shuttle. So I think when I really can't think of anything, I will go to the park. I think that is the habits I get from UK, you know, there's nothing much to do. And especially during the lockdown, like you can still go out, but the only thing you can go is the park. So when I can't think of anything, I go to the park and just walk for an hour. And yeah, I even walk from, I walk for 2 hours along the time with my friends before. We just talk on the way. So I guess, yeah, when I can't think of anything, don't feel like doing anything, I just go for a walk. I can't concentrate reading novels anymore.
And would you consider yourself as a disciplined person when it comes to your art practice?
Yeah, for example, when I have projects on hand, like the Art Basel one, I will set my schedules, like I go to the studios at 10 and I plan my lunch and then I work till maybe 7 or 8 or it depends on my progress. Yeah, so I kind of like repeat this quite like routinely every day when I'm I'm doing a project. But if I'm not, if I don't have like specific exhibition that I have to make work for, I will still kind of promise myself to draw something maybe once in a week. I can't do it every day now, but during the lockdown, I do kind of force myself to draw every day, but like really quick drawing, pastel drawing. But at least, yeah, I feel productive. Yeah, I like feeling productive.
Now, I have a bit of a random question, but when you were talking about drawing, it reminded me of a neighbor I had. When I was really young, I think around 8 or 9 or somewhere around that age group, and I had a neighbor who was really good at making drawings, and I would go every week and maybe even more than once a week to him and ask him if he could make me a drawing. I was really mesmerized by his drawing skills. So in hindsight, that must have been really annoying to have this kid coming over all the time. Do people ask you this as well?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, people are just like, oh, can you draw this for me? Because when I'm in class, I usually just doodles on my book anyway. But the older you get, you know, people are like, oh, you always have this friend say, oh, can you design this poster for me? You just draw it in like 30 minutes. I'm like, no. But I mean, I guess I or a drawing person kind of can relate to this. Yeah.
What else are you working on, Jenny?
At the moment, I'm still doing this hand-binded mini book with a dry point print that I gave it to the Odd One Out, and she, Fimi, she bring it to the LA Art Book Fair. So that was the project I was working on. And now I probably will be making some few woodblock prints, maybe for the show later. But yeah, I don't really have like, I'm not the person that kind of make exhibitions every year because it's really tiring for me. I mean, if you want to make your own exhibitions, you have to do a lot of planning beforehand. And also, if I don't feel like I have a specific topic or issues I want to kind of talk about, I usually just, yeah, continue making prints or like a image for myself, drawings for myself, instead of making it like a really concrete big project.
And as a printmaker, what else is on your wish list that you haven't tried yet?
I think I do want to try the lithograph. I mean, I've made a field print at the RCA when I was there, because I just feel like, oh, they have all the equipment and all the tools and technicians. I should try making lithograph, but I don't really enjoy it. I mean, I make one monocolored print, and then I'm like, oh, I'm done. But now thinking back, if I can do it again, I think I would try making a multicolor lithograph prints, because lithographs can depict the drawing marks really nicely, especially like pencil-like mark, or we call it like a wash. It's like a watercolor kind of texture. So I guess I would like to try lithograph again if I have the chance.
The other challenge that you face in Hong Kong is that you always rely on other people's equipment to print because space is so limited here.
Yeah, because before I went for the MA, I actually have like a small studio at the JCCAC with my friends. Guess we have like subsidies from the Jockey Club or something. So we have like much cheaper rent. But for now, we have to pay like really expensive rent for such size or such convenience locations if I want to rent a studio. So yeah, when I come back, I was like, everyone asked, are you going to set up a studio? I was like, maybe later, because I don't really want to, you know, got stress every month on the paying the rent, but I make nothing. I really hate this feeling. It's like, oh, I didn't go to the studio enough. I didn't make enough print, and I feel really anxious. So I tend to now think like this way. If I have to make a big project, I'll just go to other studios, rent their equipment facilities to complete this project. And this is actually also one good method of working, because you can kind of plan things ahead, but also you may have less time of experimenting things. And that's why I mentioned I got like a really tiny press at my home that I can just print like small size printing, but I guess that's enough for the experimental part.
Let's complete this conversation with the Last Supper question. So if you were to have your final dinner, which artist would you invite and what would be the last topic you would talk about?
I guess I would like to meet... I have two artists I quite like. One is Paula Rego. I think she passed away last year. I think her works also inspire me a lot. I've got one of her book that is called The Lullaby, a nursery rhyme. She actually make etching with this master printmaker. So actually the master printmaking provide her like technical support, and she make this series of work inspired by nursery rhymes, like really old British nursery rhymes. And some of them are really, I don't know, it's just like those fairy tales you have heard in the past. You wonder why they even give them to children, like kind of cruel, some of them, and she make work out of it. So I really like that set of work. So if I got to meet her and at the Last Supper, I would really like to, I don't know, just doodle with her, have tea and ask her about why she choose this nursery rhyme.
Many thanks, Jeannie, for taking the time to meet me today, and all the best with your upcoming work and projects.
Thank you. Yeah, enjoying going to the Hong Kong Island once in a while.
That's it, and thank you for listening to today's episode with artist Jeannie Wong. If you like this show about art in Asia, you can support us by giving this episode a star rating and subscribing to this podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or wish to participate in this podcast, you can contact me on oscar@thelastsupper.asia. You can visit my website www.thelastsupper.asia as well, or contact me direct on Instagram @thelastsupper.asia.